All right, we are ready to go. Next presentation. Very excited to have here today, United Technologies, Greg Hayes, Chairman and CEO. You know, Greg joined United Technologies about 20 years ago, was part of the merger with SunStrand, and took over as CEO in November 2014. Was elected to chairman in September 2016. Greg, I know you have some prepared comments, so take it away.
Thank you very much, Joe. Hello to everybody. It's interesting to be at EPG and not to be in Longboat Key for the first time in forever, but not bad digs here. Always tough to follow Ed Breen, too. Ed was kind of my hero in terms of shareholder activism from the CEO suite. All I can say is we're going to get ours done a hell of a lot faster than he got his done. So we got that going for us. He's left the room. Ed's not still here, is he? Just kidding. Okay, just a couple of slides here. I'm really make 10 minutes. You guys know the UTX story, and you can read this story. This is, of course, the disclaimer that anything I say can be used against me later, but don't believe everything I say. Let's see. And next. Okay. You guys know the company, right? And you know we decided not quite 6 months ago to split the company up into three individual standalone public companies. And I think the best thing I can say is these are all great companies with global franchises. If you think about it, the aerospace business, the 2018, this is on a pro forma basis, about $44 billion in revenues last year with Rockwell Collins on a full year basis. You know, this year you're going to see that grow somewhere around 6-7% organically. Then by the time we get to 2020 and the splits, we'll be approaching $50 billion in revenue for the aerospace businesses of UTX. So a large company with scale to compete across the entire spectrum of aerospace and defense. Carrier, again, another global leader. And I think, again, we'll talk a little bit more specifically about Carrier in a second. But I would say well-positioned as a standalone business and with some of the highest margins in the HVAC industry, which will set them apart and we think will set a great floor for the valuation as we go forward. And of course, there's Otis, right? The iconic Otis, 165 years young. The leading elevator, escalator manufacturer, servicer in the world, more than 2 million units under service. And if you think about these companies in terms of where the S&P 500 ranks will be when we're done, the aero business about 63 based on last year's revenue, about 137 for Carrier, and number 200 for Otis. So three S&P 500, S&P 500 in the top 200. And all of these businesses, I think, are great franchises, which should have a great reception in the market next year. So Carrier, you know Carrier. All right. You can see the segments splits there. HVAC is about half of the revenue, roughly $9 billion in true HVAC. That's residential and commercial HVAC. We can talk a little bit more in the Q&A about the markets. But again, Carrier, the clear leader in the HVAC space. Refrigeration, that includes both the commercial refrigeration business that we have in Europe, as well as our transport refrigeration-based business in the U.S. and Europe. And lastly, of course, the fire and security business. It's about half products and half service. And geographically, again, very good split there between Americas and EMEA and Asia. Importantly, Carrier number one or number two in every market in which we compete. I think, again, if you think about why to invest, obviously new equipment and replacement demand remains strong with over 100 million air conditioners installed here in the U.S. with an average life roughly 12 to 15 years. Strong demand, not just for today, but for the coming years. Also, new product investments. We've doubled the amount of R&D at Carrier in the last 5 years. We've also introduced over 100 new products in each of the last 5 years. That's paying off both in terms of margins, but really more importantly, it's giving us the organic growth that we have been looking for. Significant opportunities for follow-on M&A. What I would say about Carrier, quite simply, is they will have tremendous optionality around their portfolio. And if you think about this business, and I go back to what Mr. Breen was saying just a few moments ago, when you split up UTC into the three component businesses, Carrier probably has the most runway in terms of value creation through portfolio optionality. You know what that means, of course. Probably things that we can split up. And you might wonder, what does a fire and security business have to do with HVAC? What does a commercial refrigeration business have to do with HVAC? So again, a lot of things to do there. And again, I think that will also allow them to pay down their debt very quickly by taking some of those assets that are probably not core to an HVAC business and monetizing those over time. Otis, again, not much need to be said about Otis. 60-40, or 50, I guess it's about 58-42, service, new equipment. Again, market leader, number one or two across the globe. Clear leader here in the United States. Number two in China today. And you can see well distributed in terms of geographically. Most important, though, I think it's really the second bullet up there. Over 2 million elevators that we service every day. And the one statistic that we like to remind people is with those 2 million units that we service, we move the Earth's population every 3 days. Right? That is the kind of global scale that Otis brings to the marketplace. And again, one of the reasons we think Otis will have a very, very strong valuation and the fact that its cash is phenomenal. Working capital at Otis turns over 60 times a year. Otis doesn't spend a penny on an elevator until it's been paid for the inventory. We get paid in advance on service contracts. That type of cash flow allows you to look at capital structures very differently than you would for an aerospace business. So, again, I think there's a lot of runway on the service side. We still know we've got 34,000 service mechanics out there. There is lots of opportunity that Judy Marks and team have been working on to digitize. To use the Internet of Things to bring value to the customers and to bring efficiency to that service portfolio. And so, again, we're looking forward to a very strong year at Otis this year, but more importantly, a lot of runway as we move forward. So, no news here. I think the targeted portfolio, the timing, this is about what we have been talking about. Today, there's roughly 630 people working on the separation activity at UTC. It's a massive effort. We started out with over 16,000 separate tasks to complete. We're down to less than 13,000, but a lot of work to do. You can see all of this is really pointing to being operationally ready to separate the businesses on December 31st of this year, meaning that the TSAs, or the Transition Service Agreements, will be in place. Management teams will be in place, the boards will be in place. Everything will be in place by the end of the year to run these businesses as standalone. Of course, there's still work to be done, the carve-out definitions and audited financials. They're actively working on that with a couple of accounting firms which are charging exorbitant rates. We also, of course, have the 10, I'm not kidding about that. Once we have the audited financial statements, of course, we can file the Form 10s, which will be the initial public offering documents for the businesses. And that'll go through a process. We expect we'll file those initially probably in September when the financials are done. And there will be an iterative process with the SEC. The goal, again, is to be mostly done by the end of the year with the Form 10, again, subject to whatever restructuring or whatever tax rulings are still out there. And, of course, the tax rulings, that's the long pole in the tent. We've talked before about the fact that there's a Canadian ruling which has a lot of variability in terms of the cost, and then there's the U.S. ruling which allows for the tax-free spin. Both of those filings have been submitted. We're in the process of working with both the IRS and the Canadian Revenue Authorities. We could be done with those things as early as fourth quarter. Once those are done, there's about 3 months worth of work to restructure the rest of the businesses based on those rulings, which puts the actual spin, we think, probably at the end of March. We've not changed this chart, so we still say, probably worst case would take us out to the end of June. We'll just have to see what the tax authorities say. But we're going to be ready to go January 1 with these new companies, and hopefully by March 31st, we will actually have three publicly traded companies as opposed to UTX. Rockwell Collins, maybe the forgotten acquisition in all of this. Again, the biggest acquisition that we've ever done, about $31 billion. And I think one of our board members when I was saying, boy, this is really expensive, he said, well, beachfront property is expensive, and you get what you pay for. And I think in this case, we bought a jewel. I would tell you the Rockwell Collins business is second to none in terms of its customer relationships. The product technology, both on the aerospace and defense, commercial aerospace and defense side, great people, great products, and a great heritage, and a great fit within our aerospace business. With the Rockwell Collins acquisition, we now offer roughly 48 of the 54 major systems on an aircraft. Right? We think we can offer a full suite on the next generation of aircraft that will provide intelligent, innovative, and connected solutions that aren't available today because of the scale and scope of our aerospace business. I'd also say that on the cost side, we're on track this year for $150 million of synergies. I think the first quarter was about $50 million, so we'll probably do a little better. We talked about 35 cents of accretion this year from Rockwell. First quarter was 20 cents. Nickel of that was from taxes, but even at 15 cents, the runway looks very, very strong. So, again, a great, great business. The integration is going well. Dave Gitlin and Kelly Ortberg running that those businesses, and I think it has been seamless, as you would have hoped as we got into this. So lastly, this is a slide that doesn't really change, and that's the priorities. If you think about UTC, really it is a focus on execution. That is delivering world-leading solutions, systems, and products to our customers around the world at a cost and value second to none. It's continuing to innovate. This year, we will spend about $5 billion on research and development. About half of that paid for by the customer, the other half we pay for. But $5 billion of investments that will lead to innovative products. Of course, we're always focused on structural cost reduction. Taking costs out is a way of life at UTC in this competitive world. And lastly, I know you might argue when they spend $31 billion on Rockwell that we are focused on disciplined capital allocation. But when debt is free, you take as much as you can. So, again, those are the priorities of UTC. In terms of the outlook for the year, unchanged since our first quarter call. You'll remember we took the bottom end up about a dime back in April. We still see a path towards the high end of this range. The consensus is right around this point. So we feel very good about the year. Sales, again, organically up 3 to 5%. Aerospace business is probably more in the 6 to 7 or 8%, with the commercial business is 3 to 5. But again, a very, very strong year. And free cash flow, $4.5 to $5 billion. And that includes $1.5 billion of costs associated with the separation activities. I think if you think about the story of UTC and really the story about the aerospace business going forward, it will be about cash generation. We've been investing for the last 8 years in the GTF program and a number of other new programs on the aerospace side. That investment cycle is winding down, and we're going to be able to generate not just strong earnings growth, but I think even stronger cash flow growth in the next 3 to 5 years as this, the amount of CapEx, the amount of inventory build, and the amount of R&D does not have to continue to go up. So a very strong future. And I think it's a great story, and we're focused on the separation primarily. So with that, Joe, let me turn it back to you.
So,
hey, Julian.
Hey, Greg. So maybe a first question, you know, on that point around cash flow growth, very high cash flow growth in 2019. How quickly do you see the cash flow improving at the aerospace businesses in the medium term? And I guess when you look at, say, the GTF program specifically, you know, when do you anticipate that getting to a free cash break-even?
Well, that's two very good questions. Did you do that? So let me just talk about the aerospace cash, first of all. As you can think about it, Pratt Whitney today is about $3.5 billion of inventory. That inventory has gone up about $1.5 billion over the last 3 years. Inventory turns last year were 3.5, this year will be 4.5. Our target is to get to 5.5. That's where the cash is really going to come from as you think about where does the cash flow growth. The other thing is, of course, that we're spending $2.5 billion on CapEx this year, $2 billion last year. That will, again, turn over after next year and start to go down to a more normal level. I think we're like 160% of depreciation today. It needs to be down at about 130%. So you're going to get cash off the balance sheet because you're not going to grow inventory. You're going to increase turns. CapEx is going to come down. And the top line is going to be growing rapidly as well on the aero side. So we would target free cash flow growth of north of 10% for the next several years.
Thank you. And just a quick follow-up on any near-term demand trends at Carrier.
Say again?
Near-term demand trends at Carrier.
Well, it's the middle of the quarter. What I would tell you is the trends that we saw in the first quarter are pretty much repeating here in the second quarter. Orders on the U.S. residential market remain very, very good. It's an interesting market because we're sitting here, this is the middle of May. The market really, we'll be able to see where it goes in the next 2 or 3 weeks here as we get into the summer heating season. But so far, very good orders, about in line with what we saw in the first quarter continuing. Even the U.S. commercial business, again, pretty decent order trends. The rest of the world, I think I said this on the first quarter call, is kind of eh. Europe, it would be the biggest eh. Again, it's just very slow growth, and we're not seeing any traction there. I don't think there's a recession in Europe, but there's certainly no growth there. So I think that's kind of the message for Carrier, and obviously Europe's big on the refrigeration side, on the transportation side, and the commercial side there. So not a lot of good news there. China, again, it kind of goes month to month, but again, we had a good start, and I think it should be okay for the year. We still feel comfortable with the kind of 3 to 5% organic growth coming out of Carrier this year.
Hey, Greg, so you talked about Carrier paying down its debt. Now, we all know Carrier's going to have debt, but where are we in terms of thinking about leverage for each of the three companies?
Lots of it. Well, look, we've got about $45, $46 billion of debt today. The goal is to obviously to push that out to the three businesses such that all three are still investment grade in terms of their ability to pay that debt down. So you can think of all three of the businesses kind of being in triple B. Aerospace may be triple B plus just because of some of the longer term contract issues. I would tell you, cash at Otis, as I said before, it's a great cash machine. They'll be able to pay down debt through, I think, just normal operations. There's a geography issue always with Otis because a lot of the cash comes from overseas, but with tax reform, it's easier to get at that. But you can think of kind of the debt load somewhere in the $6 to $8 billion for Otis. I would say 12 to 13 for Carrier, and the remaining 25 or so probably on the aerospace. But in that range, plus or minus one or two. But that gets everybody to about that triple B or triple B plus for Aero.
Great. And then could you maybe just comment on the Thyssen IPO, how that impacts Otis, if at all? And have you ruled out at this point, spinning out Otis as a European domicile company?
So it's interesting. Obviously, we've been following the TK story here for the last couple of years with the activists they've had in their stock. And we were surprised, I guess, as everybody else was, that they're going to spin out the elevator business because that is the cash cow of TK. We'd be interested in a potential deal there, but very, very difficult to do. It's impossible to do right now. In fact, if TK goes through with this IPO and Otis is spun out as a separate company, I fully expect that they would start having discussions after that process is complete. It makes a lot of sense, but really hard. I think you would see major divestitures required, especially in the U.S. and I think in South America as well. The other point I would make is if someone else, like a Kone, were to, for instance, make a play for TK, there would still be major divestitures, probably even more significant in Europe. And we're not sure that makes the deal ever palatable. So tough to do. Obviously something that I think a standalone Otis would be much more capable of pursuing than as part of UTC.
Hey, Greg, Josh Aguilar, right here.
Oh,
hey, I think you guys have pointed out two bottlenecks you'd have to overcome in order to, like, hypothetically ramp up additional GTF production, and you pointed to casting and forging capacity, I think, recently.
Yep.
If the 737 MAX grounding is extended for some time, do you think you could hypothetically overcome these bottlenecks, or is that fairly next to improbable? I have a follow-up after that.
Look, a ramp up beyond, I think, our, you know, today we're building at about rate 65. Now, that's not all going to OEM. Some of those are going to spares. It's probably a 2 to 2.5 year process, right? To add additional forging capacity at our Georgia forge operations, at least 2 years. You've got capacity constraints across the supply chain. You guys know the casting houses, whether it's PCC or Arconic. All of those, I think, are capacity constrained. The only question it would be how much capacity might get freed up from 737 production going down. We'd have to see how that worked out. Of course, we don't have the 737 engines, so that doesn't help our own shops at all. So I think any near-term further drop in production, you're not going to see us be able to step up with a lot more deliveries.
And then on Otis, the margin advantage over the next closest player, by my count, is narrowed to, I think, about 200 basis points. You still, as you pointed out, have 2 million units under service versus 1.4 million for your next closest competitor. Would you say that the inherent cost advantage moat has narrowed in that business, or are there some other exogenous factors at play? Thanks.
Well, if you think about Otis, in the last 4 years, we've invested about $750 million between new systems, productivity, IoT tools, and sensors. Much of that we have not yet seen a payback on. As I think about, you know, we've got the 34,000 service mechanics. We spend a little over $3 billion just on those mechanics. Another $3 billion on other costs associated with service. We have to attack that whole pie. And I think there's two ways to do it. You're going to get the service mechanics much more efficient through the use of the internet and some of these service productivity tools. But we also have to leverage our scale better at Otis on the procurement side. It's amazing to me the thousands and thousands of suppliers that we have around the world for the same parts. And I think, again, one of the things that Judy and team are focused on is how do you leverage the scale of Otis to try and reduce those costs and to again, get some productivity out of the supply chain.
Yes.
Sorry.
Greg, just stick with Otis if we can. And could you give us an update and progress report on all the efforts in China, and just very specifically on backlog margin, the pace of to cash conversion, that the progress you've made there?
Yeah, I think the one word that comes to mind is better. Still a long way from where we were. If you think about the Otis business, roughly $2 billion in China. Margins 3.5-4 years ago were close to 20% in that business. Today, those margins are about half of that. If you think about the drop in Otis earnings over these last few years, primarily driven by deterioration in the margins in China. The good news over the last 6 quarters is we have seen stabilization. You saw that. You saw good order growth in the first quarter. You saw it in the fourth quarter. And margin and backlog is improving. So we're starting to get a little bit of traction on price. Some of that's from new product introduction. Some of it's from more targeted segmentation of the markets and not going after some of the lower margin social housing contracts that, while attractive from a volume perspective, aren't very attractive from a margin perspective. So it's better. It's a long way from where it was.
Just a follow-up, some clarity on your discussion about potential optionality at Carrier. I detect you being just a little bit more specific as to what those options are with fire and security and commercial refrigeration. Any difference in thinking about the timeline, you know, before or after spin and what the nuances might be?
At this point, nothing's going to happen before the spin. We're sitting here to be ready by December 31st to spin. It just doesn't give us enough time. And I do not want to put the spin in jeopardy by some potential M&A transaction. At the same time, everybody knows we were in a process last year to sell the Chubb business, which is the fire and security field business. It's a $2.5 billion business, roughly, kind of 10%, 12% margin. That process fell apart in December when the market fell apart, and so we elected to pull it back and wait and see what we're going to do longer term with the Carrier portfolio. But you know, the question always goes back to what is the core of Carrier? Is it HVAC? Is it HVAC plus transport refrigeration? Which I think the answer would be yes. And everything else you wonder, you know, how does it fit? You know, commercial refrigeration and the other businesses. All really good businesses. And I think the question for the leadership team going forward is, you know, where do we want to put our dollars? Do we want to focus more on HVAC, or do we want to continue to spread them around to the across the entire portfolio? In many ways, Carrier is a holding company like UTC.
Yeah, Greg, sure. Abbott here. Just picking up on that point, given that you did shop Chubb and you sold Taylor and maybe you were shopping other stuff in the background that we didn't see, should we expect that kind of the nature of the spin restrictions that there's, you know, kind of a two-year cooling off period or anything that we have to be mindful of as Carrier comes out?
There are some restrictions. There's something, I want to give you a tax lesson now, something called an active trader business, which is the basis that we use for valuation of the spun companies. And there's a prohibition on disposal of one of those active trades or businesses during some period. It's not perfectly defined. I think the lawyers would say, let's be cautious and call it 2 years. Some people might say it's 12 months. But even 12 months in, it's probably another 12 months to get the process done. So I fully expect within a couple of years you'll see things, you'll see work on that portfolio. I can't tell you what it's going to be, but there are some, you couldn't do it on day one. You couldn't just enter into a transaction outside of the, you know, doing something for the entire company. You couldn't do individual portfolio transactions right away.
Great, and I also was just curious on the timing on leadership, and maybe it's coincident with the first, you know, launch of the Form 10s, but you know, it would seem we know who the leaders of the businesses are, but it also seems like you're running a race, so maybe it's not a fait accompli who's running these businesses, and any other color there would be interesting.
So look, we have strong leaders in both the Carrier and the Otis business. We have been working a process with the board of directors to make sure we get the absolute right person into each of those roles. And I would tell you they're very different in terms of the skill set. For me, Otis is about execution. It's about making sure you're driving margins, you're driving productivity, and you're driving that business and leveraging the scale. As I think about the Carrier business, while that is all important too, as well for operation, it is the strategic part of the Carrier portfolio that's going to have to be addressed. And I think that, the capital allocation, what do you do with the proceeds, you know, what's next. So we want to make sure we got absolutely the right people. But I tell you, we've got very strong leadership teams, we've got a good bench, and we'll have a decision here before, and I think I said this before the end of the second quarter.
Yep. Hey, Greg, so you went with the kind of more detailed answer to the Thyssen question. So maybe you can go into a more detailed answer about kind of the big three HVAC guys.
Well, they were just here. I mean, did you ask them?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you what they said. See what you say. Similarly to Thyssen, are there any prohibitive overlap that would require substantial, concessions when looking at either JCI or now a freshly split train business?
Yeah, look, I think, and this is not a surprise to anybody, there is significant overlap in all of those businesses and would require divestitures, full stop. The concern that we have had through this whole process is not that you can't get a deal done, it's just that it would take up to 2 years to probably get a deal done. What we have found in dealing with the DOJ through the Collins acquisition is that they require not just that you sign a divestiture agreement with a buyer who can be a viable competitor, but you can actually close that deal before you can close your deal. So it really has extended the timeline on these M&A transactions out beyond what should be a 9 or 12 month process, probably closer to 2 years. And there will be some pushing and shoving if you're going to try and put some of these HVAC businesses together. Obviously, Carrier's got a leading share in res, light commercial as well. I think we're probably third or fourth share on the commercial side. So you can imagine there's things that you can do, but it's not like you're going to go in day one and come up with a solution the DOJ is just going to buy. You're going to have to make the case how it's better for consumers to bring these businesses together. And I think it can be done. It'll just take some time.
And then thanks for the actual inventory number on Pratt. Can you give us receivables, and then also just what below the line in kind of investing cash flow? You guys have had a big drag there. How much of that drag is associated with just GTF? You know, the and whether it's building spare engines and that kind of thing.
So it's been almost all spare engines for GTF. And keep in mind, when we build a spare engine, it goes into the spares pool at cost, right, which is significantly higher than typical selling price. We can do that because we're going to sell them as spares eventually, not OEM units, and again, at a significant margin, hopefully someday. You know, right now, there is almost 200 spares sitting in Pratt's inventory. I think that's the right number at last count. So if you think about the last 3 years, all that below the line, that has been primarily building up the spares inventory to support the fleet. We've started actually liquidating some of that, I think, this last quarter. Some spares coming out of there going to the customers, and we'll continue to see that over time. Obviously, we had the spares there because of some of the durability issues we were seeing as we had some of these campaigns to retrofit the fleet. So, again, it was a big drag. It does not repeat, and that number will go down over the next couple of years significantly.
And those are being sold to external customers, correct?
Yeah, or into the MRO supply or the MRO network, right?
Which is an external customer.
Yeah, which is an external customer.
And then receivables percentage of sales for Pratt?
I don't have that number for
total working capital percentage of sales for Pratt?
Let me. Why don't you call Carol? He'll get you that number.
I have. He hasn't given
it.
I
didn't tell you either. Okay. Nice try, though. Carol, do you know that number? Hey, Martin.
Hi, Greg. You were very kind to provide us details on how the debt will potentially be allocated. What of the other liability pools, like tax, environmental, and pension? Is there anything unintuitive about how they will be allocated?
No, in fact, as part of the Form 10, we've been allocating all. We've gone through a detailed look. I think, you know, not surprising, most of the pension liability in the U.S. is aerospace related. Very small piece is at Otis and Carrier. We'll keep. I think the aero business will keep all of the U.S. pension, and then the foreign pension just goes to whoever company is responsible for that. In terms of big liabilities, environmental, again, we'll do that by business. I think the biggest liability we have is for asbestos settlements. That's primarily a Carrier responsibility, so they'll take that liability. But there is, as we have gone down the balance sheet, we've tried to be as even-handed as possible here. We've not tried to saddle one of the businesses with liabilities that don't really directly relate to their business.
Greg, I think we're good to go on questions, unless there's anything else you wanted to add.
Well, appreciate the questions, and look forward to talking to you all in the fall when we're ready to do the roadshows. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Greg.